Next on our docket, we have the case of Woods versus Delgar. Case number 08-CA-1288. Counsel, have you had the opportunity to read the procedures handout?
Yes, sir.
And do you have any questions about any of those items? Thank you. And we're ready to proceed when you are, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Susan Morath Horner, and I represent the appellants in this case, Michael and Jeannie Woods. And I want to begin just with a quick review of the facts in the record, just to put the case law in context. And I think the facts of our case are a little bit simpler than the preceding matter that you just heard. Appellant Michael Woods was injured when he slipped on a patch of ice in front of the Applebee's restaurant in Boulder, Colorado. The sidewalk was otherwise dry. It was not snowing that day. The only evidence in the record is that the patch of ice was caused by melting snow draining off of Delgar's decorative awnings off the restaurant, dripping to the sidewalk below, and then refreezing. Now, both Delgar and its landlord, Vale Lizard, admitted in their depositions that they knew of the ice hazards that were caused by these awnings, that they had this propensity to drip. And the neighboring restaurant manager, who actually saw Michael fall, and who routinely salted and sanded under his own awnings, remarked at the scene that they, Delgar, definitely should have attended to that ice. And there's no dispute that at all times Delgar had possession and control over the restaurant premises. Now, Boulder Municipal Code Section 828 explicitly prohibits the drainage of water into the right-of-way where it may refreeze and cause injury. It provides that no owner, lessee, or occupant of property shall cause or permit water to flow upon any sidewalk, street, alley, or other public right-of-way so as to impair the use of such place when the weather is such that the water may be frozen into ice or where the drainage is such that it may create a hazard to persons or property.
However, that ordinance does not expressly provide that it is creating a civil action for the violation of it, does it?
It was held in the Easton case that it does.
That it does?
That it does.
That it expressly provides?
Not that it expressly provides. What the Easton case said, and truly I think that the Easton case is the controlling case here, and probably the case can be decided on that authority alone. The Easton case addressed two different ordinances. It addressed the snow removal ordinance, which we're not claiming under here, and then it addressed a separate ordinance, 828, which deals with, it prohibits the actual drainage of water from a building such that it can refreeze and cause a hazardous condition. And Easton said as to the snow removal ordinance, because that ordinance did not specifically state that it created a civil liability, and because it was in derogation of the common law, that it did not impose civil liability. There could not be a negligence per se instruction. But as to the discharge ordinance, it found that because that ordinance was in fact consistent with the common law, that it did impose civil liability, and a negligence per se instruction was therefore appropriate as to that ordinance.
So are you saying that if an ordinance is consistent with the common law, then it can support a negligence per se claim even though there is not an express statement in the ordinance that creates a civil liability?
Yes, and I believe that's what the Easton Court held. that it's only if it is in derogation of the common law that you need to have an explicit statement within the ordinance that it imposes civil liability, which it didn't find in the snow removal ordinance.
Does it say that it creates an action for negligence per se, or does it simply say that at common law breach of the duty of this duty is negligence and may result in civil liability? Does it say?
It says anywhere? Both.
Okay, can you point that out to me?
Yeah, the it says the ordinance reflects the common law duty to avoid the affirmative creation of a hazard on the public thoroughfare. At common law, a breach of this duty is negligence, which may result in civil liability. And as to negligence per se, find it in the case. It stated, I'm not sure if I can find the exact passage. It's, I believe it's on 1366. And I believe what it said was that the negligence per se instruction was appropriate as long as it was made clear in the instruction that a puddle of snow that was melting in the sidewalk itself would not necessarily be a discharge. That there had to be a clarification when the jury instruction was given under negligence per se.
Thank you. I think I may have spotted it in that second paragraph or that paragraph, lower paragraph, that says, thus violation of the ordinance may constitute negligence per se.
Right.
I'll read that more closely later. Go
right.
ahead.
And I think what was really interesting here, so that the trial court, even though it looked at Easton and it relied on Easton, it still concluded there could be no liability under the ordinance because the Woods did not demonstrate that Delgar had engaged in an affirmative act, which it interpreted to mean had personally constructed or designed or repaired the awnings. And what was interesting is it cited the exact part of the the opinion that I just read, where the court, Easton Court, stresses, it italicizes the part of the ordinance, says, no owner, lessee, or occupant shall cause or permit water to flow upon the sidewalk where the drainage is such that it may create a hazard to persons or property. And then immediately following this is where Easton says, this ordinance reflects the common law duty to avoid the affirmative creation of a hazard in the public thoroughfare. So I think Easton held in absolute unequivocal terms that artificial drainage of the type that's described and prohibited in the Boulder Ordinance is, in fact and law, the type of affirmative act as it's used in the common law and in the case precedent that's been talked about in this case. And it applies to anyone in possession, and it applies either to the causing or to the permitting of the drainage. So Easton did not, and nor did any other case, remotely suggest that in order to recover, the plaintiff needs to show that the defendant had personally built the offending structure or somehow created the poor drainage situation. It's just not there in the case law. And Easton is
so
not an anomaly.
Excuse me, Counselor.
Yeah.
Are you arguing then that the ordinance where it says no owner, lessee, or occupant shall permit water to flow, et cetera, that is actually an affirmative creation of a hazard by permitting rather than actually taking some act?
Yes, I believe that's what the Easton
accomplishing that.
Yes, I think that's what Easton said, and I think there's a couple of other cases that I'll touch on that also support that,
right,
that interpretation. And one of them is an older case cited by Easton, and it's the Hugely versus Trollinger case, Supreme Court 452 Pacific 2nd 1006, a 1969 case. And it involved a very similar situation, not far actually from where Mr. Woods fell, the difference being that it was gravel that was on the sidewalk that had been scattered by virtue of cars going in and out of the defendant's parking lot. And the court in Hughley reversed judgment in favor of defendants, and it adopted the restatement of torts, second, section 350, which I think is worth quoting here. It says, a possessor, not necessarily an owner, but a possessor of land over which there is a public highway is subject to liability for physical harm caused to travelers thereon by a failure to exercise reasonable care in creating or maintaining in reasonably safe condition any structure or other artificial condition created or maintained in the highway by him or for his sole benefit. So I think this concept of an affirmative act is really kind of a misnomer. I think the more accurate term and the approach that the restatement takes, which is also part of our body of law, is the sense of an artificial condition. And the standard is not a personal hands-on creation of that condition, but traditional notions of reasonable care to avoid injury. And Hughley, in turn, relied on another ICE case, which we cite. That's Sill versus Lewis, Supreme Court, 344 Pacific 2nd, 972, 1959 case, which I think also supports reversal here. Like our case, Sill was a drainage case. And we don't know a lot about the facts. It's a pretty short opinion, but the court states that the plaintiff contended and offered evidence to prove that defendant's premises were constructed and maintained so as to discharge water upon the walk in violation of a city ordinance. The icy condition of the walk was attributed by plaintiff to freezing of the water. And in finding the plaintiff had adequately stated her case, Sill said nothing about the need to establish an affirmative act. It just focused on, like Hughley, whether the building had been constructed or maintained in a manner that it caused the hazardous condition. And that was a fact question for the jury. And so really, I think the cases that have used the term affirmative act, I think that terminology developed from a different type of fact pattern. And there's a collection of cases actually in note 2 in the Biddle versus Brunetti case. Most of them are unselected, but they all concern circumstances where there was a question as to whether the defendant, perhaps there had been naturally occurring snow, but maybe the defendant had attempted to remove the snow, had done so poorly, and perhaps made the situation worse. And those are the kind of cases where you're seeing this terminology, affirmative act. But it just doesn't really translate well into the bad drainage cases and really isn't used in that context. I have a little bit of, because I'm mostly out of time here, I think I want to reserve some time for rebuttal. Let me just one more case I would like to mention. It's the Mile High Fence Company versus Radovich, Supreme Court 489 Pacific 2nd 308 1971 case. And that was a leading pre-Premises Liability Act case. And because this case does fall out of the Premises Liability Act, I think it's relevant. The hazard in that case was a post hole that was left just adjacent to the public sidewalk. And in Mile High, they made it clear it wasn't important who left the post hole or who dug it, who created it. The court again adopted the restatement and said that the law imposes a duty upon the possessor of land to warn or protect those using the public way from the dangerous condition. And failing to take such action, the possessor becomes liable for the harm caused by its breach of duty. So I think no matter which angle you look at it from, the ICE cases or the Pre-Premises Liability Act cases, the trial court's ruling just went too far. The case remains at its heart a negligence case. And to impose a requirement that the defendant actually had this hands-on construction of the thing that caused the injury, I think rewrites the law of negligence, where the standards really have always been, you know, notice, foreseeability, and reasonable care, which are the standards that should have been applied here. And I'll reserve my tiny remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Brad Ross Shannon. I represent Delgar Mark Gauthier from my offices here as well. This is a straightforward and really fairly simple case that applies the long embedded principles of no duty, no common law duty to owners for injury that occurs on a public sidewalk. The court looked at the issue properly, addressed the, identified the issue, and properly applied the issue to the undisputed facts in this case. It was undisputed that Delgar, as the lessee of this property, took no affirmative act to create the icy condition that caused Mr. Wood's fall, and that the court properly applied the Biddle v. Brunetti case law, which states that there is no common law duty to a landowner or to a lessee of a building for any injury that occurs on an adjacent public sidewalk unless there is an affirmative act creating that condition.
Isn't the no duty rule limited to there being no duty for a landowner or a possessor to no duty to the public for naturally caused hazardous conditions? Isn't that really what the rule is?
Yes, I think that is. And the court talks in footnote 5, Supreme Court in the Biddle v. Brunetti case, talks really about what that means. And that means is, what that means is if the landowner or the possessor of property takes an affirmative act to create the condition, then that's outside the no common law or the no duty rule. And so naturally occurring snow, if there's some affirmative act to create, take that snow and try and drain it, for instance, and creates an icy condition, that's the exception. And that's what this trial court looked at was, do we have an exception here? Are there any facts to support an affirmative act by Delgar, the lessee, to create this condition, therefore creating a duty? And the court got it right.
The Hughley case cites to the restatement second of torts section 350. Do you believe that Colorado has accepted that restatement?
Well, the Hughley case was well before the Biddle v. Brunetti case. The Biddle v. Brunetti case, I think, identifies specifically this fact situation. And the Biddle v. Brunetti case talks about how the no common law duty for a private person to take care of a public sidewalk is firmly embedded in Colorado jurisprudence. So for this particular fact pattern, that's the law that is firmly embedded in Colorado jurisprudence. That's the law that the Supreme Court has applied.
Let's assume for a minute, if you will, that we were to conclude that Biddle v. Brunetti stands for the proposition only as to naturally occurring hazards. Does your argument still stand up?
It does, because Biddle v. Brunetti talks about the exception to the no common law duty, and that is there has to be an affirmative act. And that's what Judge Birkencotter in the Boulder County District Court identified as the issue, and properly so. And the undisputed facts, again, are that there was no affirmative act by this lessee. We're a restaurant owner. We're inside the restaurant, essentially making spaghetti. So there was no affirmative act by us to create any condition on that sidewalk. The undisputed evidence was that the awning was there before we got there, before we rented the premises, that we had no control over that awning. In fact, the testimony was that we didn't like the awning, that we thought it was ugly and we wanted to change it, but we couldn't. The person that could change it was Vale Lizard, and that was the proper person to pay damages to the plaintiff, which they did.
Let me take you back to restatement second of torts section 350. Do you think that's an accurate statement of the law in Colorado?
Well, I don't think it's an applicable statement to a case where an individual is injured on a public sidewalk suing an adjacent private landowner. And I think Biddle v. Brunetti makes that clear, that the first issue is duty, and that in Biddle v. Brunetti, there is no common law duty unless there's an affirmative act. With respect to the issue of the ordinance, I think it's important to understand the framing of the pleadings, or the framing of the case by the plaintiff. The plaintiff alleged negligence based on a failure to build, design, manage, and/or maintain the property to prevent dripping from the awnings. Reiterated that in the response to the motion for summary judgment. The complaint did not include any identification of the ordinance. We think that under Rule 9I, that there has to be an identification of a specific ordinance. It was not identified. First time, in fact, interrogatories were propounded to the plaintiff, and the plaintiff stated in interrogatories that he is not basing his claim on any ordinance, and specifically talked about the Boulder Revised Code, stating that there may have been a violation of the snow removal ordinance, but that is not a basis of his legal claim. That ordinance specifically is 8213 of the Boulder Revised Code. The ordinance addressed in the Easton case was 828, which prohibits the a landowner or lessee from causing or permitting the discharge of water. The Court of Appeals in that case looked at that ordinance and stated that melting snow does not meet the definition or does not meet the purpose of that ordinance. And consistent with the common law exception, or the exception to the no-duty common law rule, stated that the only way that ordinance could apply is if there is an affirmative act. And again, in this case, we don't have an affirmative act by the lessee of the property, Delgar. I think,
Mr. Ross Shannon, let me interrupt you there a minute. Do you agree that Easton is controlling in this case?
Well, I don't.
And why not?
Well, because Easton was never pled, or I should say that the statute was never pled. And additionally, the statute does not create a civil cause of action. But I think the principles of Easton, if the court is to look at that municipal code, and the trial court did, that the principles of Easton support the trial court's decision. That is that even for this ordinance to apply, there has to be some fact of an affirmative act by Delgar, the lessee, and there simply was not.
Okay. Let me back up just a little bit off the negligence per se issue, but just to the language in Easton that says this ordinance reflects the common law duty to avoid the affirmative creation of a hazard on a public thoroughfare. And it appears to me, or it could be read, that if this ordinance does reflect that common law duty, it says that no owner, lessee, or occupant of property shall cause or permit water to flow upon any sidewalk. So that sounds to me like permission, or permitting, rather, that water to flow on a sidewalk would be an affirmative act. Do you differ with that?
I do, and I think the Court of Appeals in 1993 differed with that, because the Court of Appeals talked about, number one, melting snow does not create a duty to the landowner, that there has to be some affirmative act.
Naturally occurring melting snow, though, right? Because naturally occurring melting snow, not melting snow off of a man-made object or some unnatural object.
Well, Biddle v. Brunetti certainly talked about naturally occurring snow. I don't think Easton did. I think it just talked about melting snow, and it required some affirmative act. Now, the definition of cause or permit permits, the definition of permit in Webster's Dictionary includes to make possible, requiring some affirmative act. It's not an inaction, and that's really what the plaintiff's arguing here, is that Delgar, as the lessee, didn't take action. That's not what the firmly embedded no-duty rule is, or the exception to that no-duty rule. It's not inaction, it's action. And so whether Mr. Hitchings, the next-door neighbor, voluntarily threw salt out there, that doesn't matter. That doesn't create a duty for us to do so. So it does require, based on Biddle and based on Easton, it requires some affirmative act to create that situation, not an inaction to allow the situation to continue.
So, Mr. Ross Shannon, then, as I understand your argument, if the facts here were simply that there was an eave over the walkway and the eave was dripping, over the walkway and created a sheet of ice over the walkway in front of the entrance door, there would still be no duty to do anything about that sheet of ice.
The duty would be on Vail Lizard, who owned the property, certainly. And again, Vail Lizard fessed up to their duty. They settled with the plan. But no, there would not be a duty to the lessee who did not take an affirmative act creating that condition. That is correct. I'll just wrap up and say in summation that we see this as the plaintiff's argument is really an attempt to undo Biddle v. Brunetti, which has been on the books for 20 years and talks about the firmly embedded no-duty rule, and that the trial court properly identified the issue, and that is there an exception to that no-duty rule caused by an affirmative act? And the undisputed testimony in this case is that Delgar did not take any affirmative act to create the icy condition in which Mr. Woods fell. If you don't have any further questions, I'll be finished. Thank you.
Just real briefly, I want to take issue with a couple of things. Biddle versus Brunetti, well, it's the controlling law on naturally occurring ice. It is not the controlling law in this case. The only facts in the case are that this was a poor drainage situation off the building. So the reliance on Biddle versus Brunetti is misplaced. The key case is Easton, and that is, in fact, the controlling case here. Delgar states that they had no right to, or they had no ability to change the awning. They actually admitted in their deposition that they did have the right to make request changes to the awnings because they said they didn't like the awnings and they had put in a request. They thought they were ugly and they wanted some other kind of awning. So they did have that ability to request a change. As to Easton, I think they tend to just really, you know, make a very intricate dance around that case so that it would not apply. That case did, in fact, as Your Honor suggested, deal with naturally occurring ice and drainage off a building and was trying to make the distinction between the two in sorting out which ordinance would apply. And finally, as to the negligence per se, I know they don't want us to have that instruction at trial. It's not a separate claim. It's a evidentiary shortcut, negligence per se. Even if we don't get that instruction, though, the law under Easton is still going to apply. It's still going to control this case, and that court did say that a violation of the Boulder Code is, in fact, an affirmative act and constitutes or can give rise to civil liability. And I believe I'm out of time.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. Thank you.